107 on KMHL, and it's time for Good Gardening from the Greenwood Nursery. And Tracy and Marshall and Jeff Farber, the owner of the nurseries, is with us once again in studio this morning. Jeff, how are you?
Good morning, Heath. I'm great.
Oh, good. Glad to have you with us.
Temperatures are a little bit better today.
It's kind of nice, isn't it?
A little cloudy, but, you know.
You got to have a few days like that, don't you?
I don't mind not sweating as much as I have the last couple weeks.
Right. It's been warm, that's for certain. And, of course, that leads to a host of different issues and problems that we're going to talk about today with heat and the humidity and things like that. And just, you know, summertime in general. Lots of different things going on. You know, a lot of, I would imagine, problems more so than anything at this time of the year, right? Because everybody's kind of planted their stuff for the most part. You know, and they're just kind of maintaining right now.
Maintaining, or with the rainfall, that's created a whole set of issues that we haven't seen for several years, because it in the last 6-8 years, we haven't had this wet a summer.
Sure.
And that by itself brings a whole different set of problems to, you know, plants and garden products and lawns. And so there's been a lot of questions that have arisen and problems that have arisen that people haven't seen for a while. So that's kind of what we got on the topic list today.
Okay, very good. Well, we'll tackle these topics and any you have that you're dealing with in your yard and garden. So we welcome your phone calls this morning at 532-9626 or 532-9627 on Good Gardening from the Greenwood Nurseries and Tracy and Marshall. Let's talk first off about apple scab. Tell us about this.
There's a lot of people that have called and saying that their apple trees, their fruit trees, their flowering crab trees are dropping leaves. And typically what they're seeing is, you know, there's yellow spots with yellow spots on the leaves with a brown spot in the center of that yellow spot. And the leaves are dropping off prematurely. And it's common on a lot of the old varieties of flowering crabs, but I haven't seen it on apple trees, you know, in recent history like I have this year. And it's not detrimental to the tree by any means. It just means that we've had a lot of humid, you know, wet weather. The foliage stays wet in the evening. This apple scab problem gets on the leaves of the fruit trees, and it causes them to drop off. And so if you've got trees in your yard that are fruit trees or flowering crab trees that are dropping, it is treatable. You can use a lawn and garden fungicide on them. You know, it isn't one of those things that's going to be, you know, detrimental to the tree by any means. It's more of a eyesore. It's a nuisance because you got the leaves on the ground this time of year, and it involves some cleaning up. But there has been a lot of calls about it and a lot of questions about it. So I just wanted to bring that to everybody's attention, that if they see their flowering crabs and fruit trees dropping leaves, typically it's going to be apple scab. And if we get some warm, dry weather, or even hot, dry weather where we don't have the humidity levels like they have been in past few, you know, week or two,
sure,
the problem tends to go away by itself. Some apple or some flowering crab trees that I've seen, and this happens a lot of times every year to those, by early August, mid-August, they're completely defoliated because of apple scab.
Okay.
And that's common on those older varieties of flowering crabs. But when I've seen it on the apple trees and some of the other fruit trees that are typically resistant to it and they're dropping, it's a bigger problem this year. So.
Okay. So that's just one of the things that has kind of come up because of the difference in the weather that we've had. I would imagine, I don't know if you keep records of rain and weather like this, but do you know kind of when the last summer was when we had such a wet summer?
No, I often told myself I should have done that 35, 40 years ago when I started in business, and it would have been an interesting historical trend to see, but no, I don't keep track of it.
Okay.
You know, there's I've got too many other things in this head that I can't remember half the time. So, no, I don't remember the last time that I've seen this much, you know, different leaf blights on trees caused by the, you know, the humidity and the fungus issues that are out there. And so there's, you know, I'm guessing that 1997 was a wet summer.
Right.
And I don't remember, I think maybe 2007 or 2008 was a wetter summer, but I can't remember in recent history when we've had it. You know, we had 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 2000, you know, those years in 2012 to 13, 14 were really dry.
Right.
We never saw hardly any disease problems on trees, but this year there's other issues then, drought problems. But this year we're seeing the leaf blights. We're actually seeing some plants getting too much water. You know, when we had that 6-7 inches of rain in some of the areas of the county further south and west of here, I've seen some trees that are sat in water too long, you know, after that. So they're suffering from that now. But that's spotty, and typically that isn't a big issue. When it rains that hard, most of it ran off.
But right.
It also ran to some low spots that aren't drained very well, and that's where trees are having an issue.
Okay. So, all right. Well, wet summer brings all kinds of different issues that we're talking about here this morning on Good Gardening. So give us a call if you have questions at 532-9626 this morning on KMHL. Tell us what you're seeing on the tomato side of things. A couple of different issues.
There's some different issues on tomatoes. There always is. Yep. It's the most raised vegetable crop in everybody's garden. If they don't have a big garden, they at least have room for tomatoes. And tomato blight is one of the common issues that they have year from year. And it's just, you know, people have come in with spots and yellowing of their lower leaves, and it's progressing up the plant, and that's a definite sign of tomato blight. You know, they can be, you can spray, again, use the same fungicide that you'd use like on apple scab can be used on tomatoes. It's an all-purpose, you know, fungicide that we sell at the store. And so it can be used. The other thing that you can do with tomato blight, it's still not too late, is go out and mulch them. Try to put a barrier between the soil and the bottom leaves of your plant. The fungal disease that causes tomato blight is carried over in the soil.
Okay.
And so you can try to put a barrier down, and that can be, you know, straw, hay, fabric, landscape fabric. It can be plastic. It can be old newspapers, old carpet, anything to keep the splattering of the rain off the bottom leaves of the tomato plant. And if you don't want to do that, you can spray on a weekly basis or after every rain, typically, which comes first, to make sure you treat those leaves. And as the blight gets later in the season, the plants are going to get more infected. They'll get almost defoliated. So the only thing that you really have out there is the tomatoes that are being ready to be harvested. Early like this, I would definitely treat it, try to keep it. But if it comes and gets worse later on and you've had your fill of tomatoes, you can kind of let the plants go because you probably have enough by then. But it can be devastating to the plants if it's early like this and you haven't started harvesting many yet. So
okay.
So it's something to be watchful for, wary of, and treat it if you see it.
Okay. How about blossom end rot? Always seems to be around here.
Blossom end rot is more indicative of cool springs when they plant them early, but we're getting a lot of people in with blossom end rot, and that shows a deficiency. It's not a blight. It's more of a deficiency of calcium in the soil. And with the amount of rain we've had, typically that should help with the calcium uptake of the plant. But and the temperatures we've had are great for tomatoes, and everything's growing really well. But we're seeing some of the blossom end rot, and it could have been because we had some cooler temperatures there in mid-April or mid-June, and at that point the plants were blooming, but they could have been short of calcium right at that point. I think it's early tomatoes that are having the issue, the ones that were first, you know, formed when they were first blossoming. The people have brought those in. I don't think you're going to see that continue the rest of the summer now. I think the rest of the tomato crops should be free of the blossom end rot. But it just shows that it's a sign of calcium deficiency in that plant at that time. There's a lot of natural calcium in the soil. It just has to be readily available to the plant, and that takes temperature for that to be, you know, active and able to be taken up by the plant. So
yeah.
That's why I say I don't think you're going to see an issue from now on out. It's just on the earlier tomatoes that were formed that people are having troubles. And it was, you know, there was quite a few tomatoes that people brought in with that on. And what it looks like is the bottom side of the tomato is blackish or brownish, kind of rotten looking. It doesn't affect what the good part of the tomato can still be used. Just cut that bottom end off. But it's strictly a sign of nutrient deficiency, with calcium being the nutrient that's deficient in. So
okay. And there was quite a few tomatoes that were planted fairly early because we had that stretch of really nice weather, and everybody wants to have
their tomato. There was a lot of tomatoes planted earlier than maybe they should have been. But, you know, you got to be that first guy on the block, or the first guy in the neighborhood, or the first guy down the road that's got to have tomatoes. And I'm right with them. And, you know, it's fun to have bragging rights for the first tomatoes. So,
right.
Kind of like the first sweet corn. Some of that available now, too. But, yeah, it happens in both the tomato blight and blossom end rot are common. They happen just about every year, but it's one of the things that we've had quite a few people bringing in, so I wanted to mention it today.
Okay, very good. Let's see. Again, taking your calls. If you have a question for Jeff today, we'd like to hear from you at 532-9626 or 532-9627. Let's turn our attention from the garden to the yard, because we've had a few different problems that we're dealing with here with the lawn at this point in the year.
Yep, and a lot of that's, again, weather-related.
Sure.
There's some fungal issues in lawns. I've seen some grub issues in lawns. I've seen lawns that people think should be really green and doing well with all the rain we've had, but they're deficient in nutrients. So that's making them thinner. It's also causing them to look more yellow, and they're worried they got a disease. And then you go there and you question them, and when was the last time you fertilized? Oh, it's been a couple of years. So yeah, if you've got if you've got fungal diseases in lawn, you're going to have maybe some round spots or brown irregular spots that continue to get larger.
Okay.
Now, you can also say that about grubs. You're going to have brown spots that are usually round in shape that get larger. The difference is when you go over to grab that brown spot with your hand and pull up on it, if it stays stuck tight, it's more than likely some fungal disease.
Okay.
If it's grubs, that whole patch of sod will come up, because grubs work right underneath the soil and eat the roots off and cause the grass to turn brown. And this year, we shouldn't have a lot of brown grass typically, because we've had good moisture.
Right.
It should still, if it's never been fertilized, it'll still be green. It'll just be a light green color. And if you've been watering it with irrigation and you still have that issue where it's browning up, it could be fungal because the irrigation systems are running and we've had extra moisture and we've had extra humidity. And if the patch of grass doesn't pull up, more than likely you do have a fungal issue. And that has to be treated with, a fungicide. And those are some of the things that, you can bring pictures out to the stores that we can take a look at. I make a lot of house calls where I go and physically look at the yard and check it out. And most of the time that I'm seeing, it's fungal issues because of the weather that we've been having. With that said, fungal issues get into lawns that are more stressed due to lack of nutrients.
Okay.
And so if you've got a good, healthy lawn and you're taking care of it properly, fungal issues won't be as big a deal because a grass plant can, withstand some stresses from fungus then. But we do have a lot of issues with the fungus because of the weather. And so just be wary of it. If you've got patches that seem to keep growing and there's no insects present underneath the grass, my guess is you've got some type of fungus disease that's growing in your yard. And some of them are easily treatable. Some of them are a pain in the neck to get rid of. And so it's a, case-by-case basis as to what you need to do. So.
Okay. I was going to say, I was mowing my lawn yesterday, and I noticed it was on the boulevard, but a couple of little spots where there was a little mound of dirt that looked like it had been dug out, and then there was a hole, was probably about the size of my finger,
yep.
And burrowed into the ground. What the heck is that?
You have what's called cicada killers.
Ah.
And that's one I should have mentioned, too, this morning, because we've had a lot of calls on that. How do you get rid of them? Or why are they in my yard?
Right.
Or, I notice them in our fields in Tracy and where I live by Walnut Grove. I've got trees growing there. And the cicada killers are a big, black, wasp-looking insect. They are a wasp, They're about an inch and a half long. They look They look like they're going to terrorize you to death. People are worried about them getting stung. But in all the years that I've seen them, all the years I've worked around them, I've never been stung by them.
Okay.
They, you know, when you hear the buzzing in the trees, that's typically a cicada.
Right.
They love to prey on cicadas. That's why they're called cicada killers.
Okay.
And they're a beneficial insect. They're not typically going to hurt anybody that I've ever heard of. I've never heard of anybody getting stung, but I'm sure that if a caller or a listener is listening to this, they can call in and tell me otherwise. But I've never heard of anybody getting stung by them. They are frightful, you know, because they swoop up at you and they come right out of the ground and they look like they're going to get you. But I've never had one sting me. But they are a burrowing wasp. And they can be, you know, treated with, 30 high yield, 38 plus will work on them if you have to kill them to get rid of them because you don't like them flying around.
Okay.
But they don't really need to be killed. They're not going to hurt you. They're not going to hurt anything. They are beneficial to the environment. The cicadas will do more damage to your trees than the wasps will do to you. So,
okay.
And so that's what they are. And and you find them in dry, sunny locations, usually in the ground, and that's probably, you know, by your sidewalk or whatever, with that root or whatever. It's a dry location for them to burrow into the ground.
Okay.
But they're nothing to get too
all
shook
right
up about.
So, I'm just thinking of all
you
these.
Know, as a good-looking piece of meat as you are, they'll leave you alone.
That's what I'm worried about. You know, because I've got a fence and a shed, and all the time you find the you know, the moltings of the cicadas clung to the shed or to the fence. And you mentioned that they can do damage to the trees. What they eat?
They'll eat the leaves and some buds and stuff. They're an annoyance for the noise,
the sound.
You know,
yeah,
drive you up a wall when you're sitting outside. But that, you know, the cicadas aren't harmful. You know, great harm to the trees by any means. I didn't mean that.
Right,
but,
right.
But they can do some eating of the leaves, and which most of the time you're not going to notice because it's 30 feet in the air. But,
sure.
But the cicada killers are strictly after cicadas. That's their purpose in life, from what I understand. So,
okay.
From my research and reading up on them. So,
okay.
And like
good.
I said, my personal experience with them, I've never had them sting me.
Yeah.
And I've had a lot of them. When I'm in the fields doing trimming on some of the trees and shrubs, they're flying out of the ground right by the plants that I'm working on. And the first time I, you know, it's probably 30 years ago, the first time I experienced them, I thought, gee whiz, you know, I stomped on them and everything else.
Right.
And, you know, that was probably the quickest way to get stung that there ever was. And,
sure.
But they're not like the wasps, the paper wasps that build their nests underneath your eaves.
Right.
They'll come and bomb you just for the thrill of trying to sting you. But these cicada killers won't bother you at all that I've ever heard. So.
Okay. All right. Good to know. Let's see here. How about you? I'm not sure if you hit the tree roots on the surface. You
no.
know, I've got a maple tree at my house, and the problem that everybody has that has a maple tree at their house, there's dirt all around. You can't get grass to grow there.
And we've had people, my lawn's looking real good, but, you know, I've got brown lines, you know, that are dead in the yard, or they're dried up. And you investigate it or talk to them and question them a little bit more, and you find out that it's a maple tree or some other tree that's got surface roots that might be just underneath the sod layer, but you know they're not allowing that root system of the sod to take up any nutrients because
sure.
there aren't any moisture because the root is right there, and so you get brown streaks through your yard. And if you follow those roots back, it's probably going to take you, or that those brown spots or brown lines will take you back to the main tree that they're coming from.
Sure.
So nothing you can really do about it. Irrigate more, water more right there. But when it gets hot in the summertime and we get 90-degree temperatures and we miss a few days of water or it hasn't rained for a few days, those areas will show some drought problems. And you'll have issues trying to keep the grass green in that spot. And it's all because of the tree. Same thing happens around spruce trees and pine trees, very shallow rooted. People say that the needles of the spruce or the pine are too acidic for the soil, and that's not the case. It's just that they've got, you know, thousands and thousands of, you know, hair roots and finer roots that are at the surface of the soil, and grass can't tolerate or compete with all those roots, and so the grass dries up around those trees also. And you can't typically add enough water on a regular basis to even keep that grass, you know, looking good, unless you've got the irrigation system and it's running every other day or something like that.
Sure. So, okay.
But nothing you can really do about it. It's just one of those things.
Kind of take the good with the bad, because, well, you know, people plant a maple tree because it grows fast and it grows
right.
big. It's great shade.
And the shady spots of the lawn, if the tree is trimmed up high enough so it's getting enough light, you'll have, you know, the grass will stay greener in the shade. If, you know, there's a lot of maple trees, the grass doesn't even grow under because it's
right.
just so dense a shade. But if the tree is larger and trimmed up high and they're still getting an ample light underneath so the grass could stay green, your grass will always be greener in those spots because it is shaded. It's not getting baked on a hot, dry summer underneath there. So.
Okay, very good. Well, again, taking questions if you have one at 532-9626 or 532-9627. It's Good Gardening from the Greenwood Nurseries in Tracy and Marshall. Weed control in lawns. Let's talk about that. What are we seeing right now?
Well, there's a lot of weeds starting to come with all this rain we've had. You know, if they did weed control back in May or June and had a good control, which most people do, the secondary weeds or the next crop of weeds with the rain that we've had, the seeds that have blown in, the seeds that were laying dormant there until the right temperature and the right conditions allowed them to germinate are popping up all over.
Sure.
I've had calls and questions about crabgrass in the lawn. They treated it with crabgrass control this spring, and they still got crabgrass. Well, there again, we've talked about it in the past. The type of crabgrass control that you're using is depending upon how long the active ingredient will stay active in your yard.
And right.
Some types of crabgrass control work 4 to 6 weeks. Some will give you 14 to 16 weeks control. And with this much rain that we've had in the recent month or two, some of it could have washed away or leached down deeper in the soil, and it's not there anymore. And just basically dispersed so that it isn't able to do the
right.
job anymore. And so the crabgrass is starting to show up around the edges, especially next to concrete curbs and driveways and asphalt curbs and driveways and gravel, and where it's really more hot and dry or dries out quicker, I should say. Crabgrass loves that environment. Crabgrass is an annual grass. It's lime green in color right now. And you can treat it with a post-emerge spray if it's young enough. And young enough, I mean it has to be under 2 to 3 inches or 2 to 3 weeks old. I should say 2 to 3 weeks old is a better way to say it, not 2 to 3 inches, because it grows real flat. And if it's just come up in the last, you know, couple weeks and you just started noticing it, you can treat it with a post-emerge. If it's been there longer than that, post-emerge probably won't work real well. The thing with a post-emergence means that you're spraying the plant that's there and trying to kill it, you know, when it's already up and growing. Some of the chemicals that are used in the post-emergent sprays can turn your grass, your good grass, more of a yellow-green for a period of time.
Okay.
Which is normal. Don't be concerned. It just makes it, you know, look like it gets burnt a little bit is what happens.
Sure. But,
so those are some things to be looking out for. The other thing, there's a lot of broadleaf weeds and coming up. And my recommendation to a lot of people, they want to go out and spray right away. And that's okay if the temperature is below 80 degrees.
Okay.
If you spray above 80 degrees, you take a risk of damaging your lawn. You can get some burn on the good parts of lawn. And so recommendations from all the chemical companies would be to say wait till the temperature drops below 80, 85 at the highest before you do any spraying. If you go out and spray above 85, you're almost guaranteeing yourself that you're going to burn some grass. So wait till it cools off a little bit, then go out and treat the weeds that are coming now. And by treating now, you should be good the rest of the summer and fall. You shouldn't have too much for weed growth after this, because we've had enough rain. It's germinating a lot of broadleaf weeds that are laying in the lawn.
So. Okay. All right. You talk about that post-emergence control for crabgrass. What's the product that you recommend out at the store?
I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head. I forgot to write it down, and there's just, you know, we sell quite a bit of it. I can't remember the name of the product, but if you go to the store, the staff will be able to tell you.
Sure.
So it's one that I haven't worked in retail the last couple of weeks much. I've been out seeing people in the yard, and there is post-emergent stuff available that works well, but it has to be on immature plants. And in most of the lawns I've looked at, it's too late to spray, so I haven't even recommended it for most people because it's too late to put on. But if they stop at the store, they can get the right product.
Okay. I only ask because I have that problem.
Yeah. Well, you stop out at the store, and my staff is a lot smarter than I am. So.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to asking them then. And, of course, that's one of the nice things. You know, with all the rain we've had, it's been a really good growing season for a lot of the plants that people have planted this spring.
Super good. I mean,
you still have plenty of plants at the store that people can come on out and put in their yard and garden.
We've got some annuals out there and that are looking fantastic, and we had a lady in there. Her pot didn't drain very well, and everything drowned it in the pot when they had all this rain. And so she came in, and she was able to, you know, fill up her pot pretty darn quick because the annuals are, and we got them in like a gallon-sized pot. So she bought three gallons of pots, basically, and put it in one big pot that she had, and it was instant color back in there, and it looked great, you know, when she got done with it. So, yeah, there's some instant color pots, we call them out there, and you buy one, two, three of those, depending on the size of your container that you're trying to fix. And some people, the wind beat the heck out of some of them here over the last couple of weeks, and too much water has affected some of them, or they went on vacation and they forgot to have somebody watered underneath the eave where it didn't get any water from rain. And so, yeah, there's some good plants out there yet that can give you some nice color from now till early September when we get the fall plants in.
Yeah, you bet. And those are always pretty, too. I would imagine that, too, if you're planning on doing something landscaping-wise, yet this year, it's probably about the time you need to be getting it figured out.
I'm out doing estimates every day, and we're trying to fill up our schedule till freeze-up. So, yes, if they're interested in doing some landscaping this fall and want to get on our schedule, just give us a call at either store, and we'd be glad to help you. And I'll come out and get measurements and work up a plan for you and proceed from there.
Okay, very good, sir. Well, we appreciate you stopping in. Tell us about the hours at the store there.
Now we're in our summer hours at both stores, Monday through Friday from 8 to 6, Saturdays from 8 to 4, and Sundays from 11 to 3. We've cut back to that. It gives us enough time to do some of our watering and gives people a chance to come on out. And Sundays are actually fairly steady days at both stores. They've got a little projects to do, and they've got time to think about it over the weekend. They get it done, and they're out there and buying and putting it in before the evening. So,
yeah, you bet.
So it's nice to have those shorter hours for us, but gives customers enough time to get it done. So and they can check with us on the web. If they got questions, they can email us through our website, or they can give us a call, and we'll be glad to help them out wherever we can.
All right. How about the numbers at both stores?
Phone numbers here in Marshall are 532-9430, and down in Tracy, it's 629-3485.
All right. Very good, sir. Well, we appreciate you stopping by, as always, and we'll look forward to seeing you again in a couple of weeks.
Thanks, Heath.
You bet. Jeff Farber is the owner of the Greenwood Nursery in Tracy and Marshall. He joins us every other Thursday throughout the growing season with good gardening from the Greenwood Nursery.